I snorted. In time for what? In time to behold her in her full, springy, nubile, youthful glory. By the time you let me talk to her, she'll have started to droop. I'm almost certain you'll survive the trauma, I said.
Life is about more than just survival, Harry.
True, I said. There's also work. Bob rolled his eyelids in the skull's empty sockets.
Brother, you're keeping her cloistered and working me like a dog, too. That's not fair.
I started getting out the stuff I'd need to fire up Little Chicago.
Dog, right. Something odd happened tonight. I told Bob about Mouse and his barking.
What do you know about temple dogs?
More than you, Bob said. But not much. Most of what I got is collected hearsay and folklore.
Any of it likely true?
A bit, he said. There are a few points of confluence where multiple sources agree.
Hit me.
Well, they're not entirely mortal, Bob said. They're the scions of a celestial being called a foo dog and a mortal canine. They're very intelligent, very loyal, tough, and can seriously kick ass if they need to do it. But mostly, they're sentinels. They keep an eye out for dark spirits or dark energy, guard the people or places they're supposed to guard, and alert others to the presence of danger.
It explains why ancient Mai made those temple dog statues to assist the wardens in maintaining security, I suppose. I got out a short-handled duster made of a rowan wand and a bundle of owl feathers and began to carefully clean the dust from the model city.
What about the barking thing?
The bark has some kind of spiritual power, Bob said. A lot of stories say they can make themselves be heard from 50 or 60 miles away. It isn't just a physical thing, either. It carries over into the never-never and can be heard clearly by non-corporeal entities. It startles them, drives most of them away, and if any of them stick around, Mouse could take his teeth to them, even though they're spirits.
I figure that this alarm clock bark he did was part of that protective power, alerting others to danger.
I grunted. Super dog.
But not bulletproof. They can be killed just like anything else.
There was a thought. I wondered if I could find someone to make Mouse a Kevlar vest.
Okay, Bob, I said. Get it fired up and give it a once-over. Right, boss. I hope you will note that I am doing this without once complaining how unfair it is that you've seen the cupcake naked and I haven't.
So noted. I picked up the skull and set it down on the sheet of translucent, rubbery blue plastic that represented Lake Michigan. Check it out while I get my spell face on. The skull spun around to face the city while I settled down on the floor, legs crossed, hands resting lightly on my knees, and closed my eyes, focusing on drawing my thoughts to stillness, my heart to a slow, slow beat. I breathed slowly, deeply, systematically walling out worries, emotions, everything but purpose. One time, when we'd been discussing martial arts, Murphy told me that eventually, no one can teach you anything more about them. Once you reach that state of knowledge, the only way to keep learning and increasing your own skill is to teach what you know to others. That's why she teaches a children's class and a rape defense course every spring and fall at one of her neighborhood's community centers. It sounded kind of flaky zen to me at the time, but hell's bells, she'd been right. Once upon a time, it would have taken me an hour, if not more, to attain the proper frame of mind. In the course of teaching Molly to meditate, though, I had found myself going over the basics again for the first time in years and understanding them with a deeper and richer perspective than I'd had when I was her age. I'd been getting almost as much insight and new understanding of my knowledge from teaching Molly as she'd been learning from me. It took me 10 minutes, 12 at most, to prepare my thoughts and will. By the time I stood up again, there was nothing left in the whole world but me, Little Chicago, and my need to find a murderer.
Bob, I whispered. Everything's nominal. We're in the green, Captain, he said, affecting a Scottish accent.
I nodded without speaking, then I drew in my will, and the skull's eyelights dwindled to the size of pinpricks. So did all the candles. Newborn black shadows began stretching between the pewter buildings, overlaying the model streets. The temperature in the lab dropped another degree or two as I pulled in energy from all around me, and my skin flushed as my body temperature went up a couple of degrees. When I slowly exhaled, my heated breath formed vapor that drifted around my nose and mouth. I moved slowly, precisely, and picked up the matchbox. Then I opened it and exposed the fleck of paint inside and leaned over to carefully place the paint down on the tiny model of my apartment building. I stood over the table, my hand touching the paint and the map, and released my will with a repeated murmur of Reperios invenios. I felt my senses blur for a moment, and then little Chicago rushed toward me, its buildings growing, until I stood upon the street outside the now life-sized pewter replica of my apartment building.